Hi there, short film fans. Welcome to another episode of the Cameo Launch Short Film Podcast. I'm Nigel Morgan, your host. Joining me today is Thomas Levardi. He is the director of For Token, Omen of the Outsiders, an epic historical drama, and we couldn't recommend it enough. It is the kind of sprawling epic tale that you don't often see in the short film genre. And we're going to talk to Thomas today about how he accomplished this amazing feat. Thomas, thank you so much for joining us today. How have you been?
Thank you very much for having me. I'm pretty good. Thank you very much.
Good. As I mentioned, it is just, I'm sure you would have heard it described as epic so many times. I'll try and use different words, but it is an amazing accomplishment just in terms of its technicality, of the storytelling, of its ambition. It's not the kind of thing that people try and do within the short film space. What made you kind of take on this kind of a challenge? And before we get into that, can you just tell us a little bit about what the story is about and what led you to tell it?
Well, you're very kind. I don't necessarily see it as an epic scale or an epic tale, because essentially how we planned to do it is our main goal was from the beginning, from the idea to through the execution, throughout post-production, the main goal was always that we need to be able to pull it off. So everything what's been done, I wouldn't call it epic scale. It was just we figured out a way to sort of mimic an epic scale, if that makes sense.
Right.
So originally the idea came from that I had this short period when I was reading these graphic novels, and I tried to get inspiration how they achieve these sort of drawings to create storyboards later on. And then at some point, I realized that I bought these books which had like 4 or 5 stories in it. So relatively short stories, but they looked epic. So they pulled off like a big scale story on the 10 pages. And essentially that's what sparked the idea that, wait a minute, if they can do it, then what they do is almost like a short film. So then I started thinking about that. Okay, if they can do it, we can do it. Let's figure out how can we do it. That's essentially how the story sparked out. And then the story, obviously, I'm not sure how did we, because I'll be honest with you, throughout the whole production, we were very, very dynamic and fluid, to the point that the last scene and the last twist was written, I think, 5 days before we shot the last scene.
Oh, no way, really?
Yeah. So the actors had to learn all their lines almost like while we're in the car. And I had to explain it to them that, okay, so this is why we did the change. And this is where we're going with it. So that was that was a bit of extra challenge what I put on them. But I think they did it as well. So we were very fluid. So originally the story was very different when I came up with the original story. It was a very, very different story. But we dived into it and started looking for actors. And while we were finding people who were willing to do all this, because that was a different challenge that, you know, because of the locations, we had to find people who are more than willing to climb up to the top of mountains and just perform. And because we met a lot of people throughout this process, then the story started evolving again from the beginning. So the original story was very different. But our main goal was from the get-go to have a very low cost, a very like a small cost and a skeleton crew. What we can manage to bring up to these relatively extreme locations and execute it. So again, our ID was from the beginning to execution.
Yeah, and it makes sense to approach it from that perspective when you kind of break it down into its component parts in terms of cast, in terms of location, in terms of what happens in each scene, to approach from the point of view of, okay, what can we accomplish in each individual scene? And that's one of the great things about film is when you weave it together, it kind of becomes more than the sum of its parts. As you mentioned it, you relied on a small cast and a skeleton crew. Can you tell me a little bit about how you chose the crew that you ended up with? Clearly, everybody was very much on their game, because one of the most difficult things about location shooting is capturing good sound, for example, especially when you're up a mountain and you've got wind and all that kind of thing. And the sound mix on this film is nigh on flawless. It captures the mood that the scene is supposed to convey, as opposed to having to battle against the elements that you actually filmed it in. So how did you go about assembling the team that ultimately helped you put it all together?
Well, first of all, I had to be very upfront with everybody what they are getting into. And I had to be sure that they have boots. You know, if they did not have boots, then we had to provide them the right equipment. One of my actors said that, oh, I think it was Maya, when I asked her that, oh, so, because I think, if I remember correctly, she'd never been in mountains or like hiking in these landscapes before. So I asked her that, do you have any boots for this? And then she was like, oh, I have a Dr. Martens. And I was like, okay, so that's not going to cut it. We need those serious stuff for you. Because we've been through this previously. So we had the experience that, you know, if the rain is coming down in Wales, and especially we were going out to Wales in early March, which means that everyone was soaking wet by the time we arrived to locations, and the locations were actually almost like ankle deep water, because at that time of the year the snow melts down, and as it melts it actually flows down on the hills and mountains. So that, because of that, you need to have watertight boots and jackets, that sort of thing, which is, you don't think it's important, but it is very important when you go out to places like this. And the sound, I mean, we were very lucky to find a sound guy. His name was Joe, and he did an amazing job on set capturing the sound. And everything we did extensive tests before, extensive, so meaning that all the shots, all the camera movements, we were testing it at home with my girlfriend. For example, the nighttime scenes, so we shot that in blue hour is it's around 20 minute time after the sun sets down below the horizon, but it still illuminates the sky. And because of that, everything has the sky is still bright. You still have some bits of light. And that casts a very bluish hue on everything. So I decided that we need to shoot the nighttime scenes in that. And then later on in post-production, we turn down the exposure a little bit so it looks more nighttime-ish. For that we spent over 2 months. Every time we had blue hour here in Brighton, every time we had blue hour, we woke up in the morning, before Blue Hour, or we did it at nighttime when it was Blue Hour. And we were just testing the capabilities of the camera, how far can we push it, and everything with that. I encouraged, so we did everything like that. I encouraged Joe to do the same with the sound. Make sure that the wind is not going to be an issue, because we're going to a place where it is very likely to be very windy. So he did tests extensively, I believe. And I think he did a really, really good job on set. But I have to say that in post-production, in the end, we were just amazingly lucky that this project landed in a studio, Nimrod Studio. And these guys just took the project to another level. And that was just something I could never have imagined, that it could happen for this project. So originally, I was planning to have like this small size teams or maybe studios, because we didn't have the budget for that. But yeah, as I said, Nimrod Studio really, really took this whole thing to the next level.
Yeah, and it's all up there on the screen when you watch it. I mean, one of the things we talk about constantly on this show is that you know, the majority of short films that you see, you'll probably only ever see them on a small screen, but so many of them are made for the big screen. And this, you know, you've got to underscore that point with this film. And I think it's a really great mentality and practice to approach any given film with, even if, you know, if it goes on the festival circuit, then yes, it's probably going to be on the cinema screen somewhere. But once it's kind of, the majority of the people that end up watching it will just be watching on some kind of device, but you don't let that restrict you in terms of the vision you have for it. And that definitely comes through with a film like this. But as you say, you had to go through a lot of testing and preparation before actually going out, which makes perfect sense. But I guess you don't really know it's working until you kind of see it come together. At what point did you realize that what you had planned was actually coming together the way you wanted it to?
Basically, I own my cinema camera. It's mine, so I was in a situation where we could just test everything. That means that the grading process, it started, and when we started creating the pre-production stuff, and at the same time when the script was in progress, the writing of the script, we were already working on the grading. I was already working on the grading to develop the look. And then from that point on, I could see that, okay, we did all the tests. I can see it's working. Now we need to go and shoot it. And then, so it wasn't a question of like, can we do it? Or is it, now I can see that it's going to happen. As soon as we finished finished the test, it was quite clear for me that, well, okay, the next step is shoot it. We have everything, we prepared. So the next step is to execute.
And once it all came together, once it was all finished, and you were able to start putting it out there, what were some of the initial reactions to the film once you started showing it to people?
I think we were blessed with a lot of very, very good reviews, which I was extremely surprised by, because I didn't expect the reviews to be that good. And I'm very grateful for that.
When was the first time you saw it on a cinema screen? Because it's been in a number of festivals now. What was that experience like when you actually saw it in a cinematic environment?
I haven't seen it on a cinema screen, but I have a studio where I'm working on a big, big, big screen. So actually, the reason why what you mentioned, that it almost feels like that it was designed for a cinema screen, is because it was. All the grading, all that stuff, it was actually designed for a big cinema screen. So the grid is I created two gradings. One of them is for the cinema space, and one of them is for TV screen at home. But none of the sound designs was created for phones, or none of the gradings was created for phones. But everything was actually designed for. So I haven't, in spite I haven't seen it on a big huge screen. It was designed for a huge screen, and throughout the creating process, it was viewed on a big screen.
Obviously this is not your first time working in film as a practice, but this is your first sort of narrative short film. Is that right?
It is, yes.
Yeah. Well, what made you go in the direction of making narrative film from your background? And we'll talk a bit about your background in a moment. What made you think, okay, you know what, I'm going to tell a narrative story and try and put it in as big a scale as possible?
I think I always wanted to do narrative stories. I just didn't know that I can do it, or I didn't know that, oh, actually, I am a director in some ways, because, you know, even though when we were shooting our music videos, I didn't think of myself as a director. Meanwhile, I was producing and directing these music videos. Yeah, I would say that what put me on, like what pushed me on to this one, is that I'm working in the commercial area, and I think I just wanted to do something different.
How long had you been doing commercials and music videos before you made this film?
Well, so basically I was one of those kids who got a DSLR camera, and then actually at the time I was flying remote controlled helicopters professionally, so it's a very different thing.
Oh, right.
And then the company I was working with, and they were my sponsors, and they produced these remote controlled small helicopters, these stunts helicopters to all different sizes. They essentially, they had a need for commercial videos, right? And then that was my way in. But I was always into photography, and I worked in photography previously. So then,
okay,
that was my way in. But I'm actually a graphic designer originally, and then at some point, I lived back in Bristol when I had a job as a graphic designer, and I literally walked out of the office after my boss was shouting at me, which is so bad now looking back. But you know, yeah, the interesting story that I just felt so crushed in that job. So this guy was constantly making someone crying on a weekly basis in the office. And at some point, at one day I snapped, I walked out, and I decided that I'm going to do freelance. And that was the point where it just all turned. I all turned this whole making commercial videos and photos into a career on a freelance basis. And then I moved to Brighton. I started getting quite a lot of clients. 2 years later, I decided that I want to make films.
Okay.
I knew that for that, I can't just jump into, and because it's not going to work. I need to learn how to do it. And I figured out that music videos are going to be my platform to learn how to do these,
right,
all these things. So we shot a music video with an amazing artist, Ebony Grace. And I remember that she didn't want to be in the music video, like her face, because she had some bad experiences previously. So she asked me to, can you just take like shots of the city of Brighton, like you do with your photos? And then I did that, and halfway through, when she looked at the footages, she was like, oh, I want to be in this one. So then that's how the whole thing came together. And then from that, quite a few artists approached me but I was really struggling with the music they approached me with, because it just doesn't align with me, you know. And then I realized that, oh, actually, the music that aligns with me would be something classical, something along that line. So I reached out to a studio in Brighton, to a label, record label, called Fat Cat. And they introduced me to an artist called Resina. And then she wanted to work with us, but they didn't know who we are. And at that point, I couldn't even show them any, just that one music video previously we shot. So they sort of, it was a leap of faith for them to like, okay, let's do something. Go nuts. Here's the song. Do whatever you want. And I was like, oh, okay, we can do whatever we want. So let's take this to a narrative base, because now I feel like it's time to, you know, because my original goal was to progress and get to a level where we are shooting a short film. So, and to test the waters, let's do a narrative base. So I wrote a script, showed it to them. They were like, okay. And I feel like they didn't have faith of this is going to come out anything good. And then we shot that with even a smaller crew. It was almost literally the actors and me. And there was an assistant as well, Robert, he's a great guy. And we did that music video. And then at that point, I felt like, okay, this is, I'm all in. Because we won, I think we won 9 awards for that music video.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that was, to me, that was a good sign. They were not like huge awards, but that was a good sign of like, okay, let's keep doing this. And at that point, I know that the next stage is going to be the short film, but this is how I got where I am right now. Sorry, right. It was a quite a long answer.
No, it's brilliant, because I think it's a really interesting story in and of itself, because it seems like at several points along the journey you had sort of crisis points where you had to make a leap of faith, or you had to get somebody to have faith in you. And it all just kind of nudges you along towards where you are now with the film that we're talking about. I think it's really, really interesting that, it kind of all begins with you deciding you're not going to stick around in this, you know, toxic, abusive environment, walking out, striking out on your own. And, you know, as in the same way that you approach the film, you know, what is executable? What can I do now? What's the step we can take and do properly? You essentially had that same thought process with your career itself, right? You're like, okay, so, you know, what can I do? Okay, well, I can do this freelance. I can do this project. You already had been using remote control helicopters and all that kind of stuff. So you had something to bring to the table, as it were, and you just kind of took one step at a time, and it slowly led you towards actually filmmaking, which is, you know, fantastic. What were some of the unexpected lessons you learned through that whole process?
It's a nonstop learning curve. I would say I can't put my finger on like the biggest things I've learned, because for me it's about constantly pushing myself to the next thing and try to master it to the best as I can do it. It's just that is very important to me. But I have to say, maybe the most important lessons I learned is around how to work with people and how to run a production in terms of almost how to run it like a business. As weird as it sounds, So I'm blessed to work with a very talented entrepreneur. He owns multiple brands, and he's just on another level. He's a similar nerd as me, who has a laser focus on execution and achieving things, which is one of the great lessons for me to see how he works. And the other one, how he treats people in business. And I think that was one of the greatest lessons I learned. As weird as it sounds, because I feel like that you expected me to say that, oh, the biggest lesson is about the grading, you know, it's about the aperture or something.
No, not at all. I think that the most important things to come out of the whole process of filmmaking is precisely what you said, is working with people, because ultimately, you know, even if you have even if you possess like multiple disciplines, if you can shoot and edit and direct and anything else and storyboard, whatever, ultimately you still need people to bring a film together, and you need to be able to work with them. They need to be able to invest in your idea. They need to be able to have faith in you as a director. And it's very, very much about working with people. And it's great that that was one of sort of like your core experiences in terms of you know, what you took out of this really long, complex journey that you've been on.
I mean, you're being very kind. It's I don't feel like I'm literally at my baby steps. These are my baby steps. But as I said, when I said how to work with people, I think I can pinpoint one thing, is that how you treat people who you're working with, that is a very, very crucial. Because what I see in other productions, sometimes people can be treated unfairly, sometimes. And I think there are some principles when you're working with people, and I didn't know these things before I worked with this entrepreneur guy. And one of the things is that you have to be fair with everybody. So, and what that means is that, you know, if what I achieved in all of my productions is that, okay, this person poured their heart into what they did on my set. Therefore, I'm going to look at the budget. Can I give them a little bit more money just to say thank you? And because everybody needs the money, and the only way I can really say thank you is that, can I squeeze that a little bit towards this person because they did so much? That's one thing. And just always keep that in front, that you just treat everything and everyone with respect.
Yeah.
And treat them as if they were you. But then you need to treat the same principle applies to you.
Yes, yes.
Because there are going to be people who are trying to challenge your principles on the reverse side, on the flip side, and you need to make sure that your production is the first. That's your priority, and you have to be fair to yourself as well.
Essentially, you hold everybody, including yourself, to the same standard. I mean, everybody has to come with their best, but you've got to treat everybody. You've got to treat everyone fairly.
I think I need to treat everyone beyond what they would ever expect. You know, because I think most people came to my production with sandwiches, for example, and on the first day, even though I told them that it's all covered, don't worry. And then I think maybe they just didn't trust that, so they brought sandwiches. So then, you know, what is the right thing to do? You spend money on the sandwiches, let me know how much you spend, and I will reimburse you for that.
These are the things to focus on, though, because not to labor the point, but this whole process is about people. You're trying to reach people with the film that you're making. You need people to make the film in the first place. And it's important that the people you're working with feel invested in the project and in the vision and in making the film successful, not just to show up, do the bare minimum and go home, but to actually really want the film to succeed. If you're the person pulling cables, you need to be invested in the importance of that job is in the production as a whole. If you're making the tea,
and
if
you
you're
need
doing
to be
anything,
appreciated,
you know,
as well. You know
and
what
you
I
need
mean?
To be so appreciated, cause, exactly.
Because yeah, maybe there's gonna be, for example, we had Tikon. He was the main assistant on our production, and a lot of times he was just sitting around as. And he never been on a set before, so he wasn't. This was his first time on a set, and he was very unfamiliar with, like, why am I sitting around? And I needed to make sure that, dude, what you do is amazing. You know, just sit around and don't worry about it.
And then additionally, it's a step in sort of the learning curve of everybody else's journey as well. Right, because they're all there wanting to work in film in some capacity or another. Part of them learning to be whatever it is they're working towards is working on your production. So they got to take something away from it. But can you talk to us a little bit about the mindset that you approach that with in terms of keeping faith, even if things are going wrong, that kind of thing?
I think when you are keep your head straight and you do the right things and you treat everyone the right way, that means that the project, and as I said, you said to you before that I think the project will attract positive energies. So even though when the project seems to be derailing, I know that I did everything right, I treated everything the right way, things are going to come together. I just need to find a solution. And one of the story for this, and I just love how it happened, is that the way we shot the first scene where it looks like there's hundreds of soldiers on the top. Originally, we shot that with 7 reenactors. The way we angle the camera, it makes them look like it's a crowd. And then when we line them up on top of the hill, we actually, I had 2 assistants behind them marking where they are standing. So then we shot 2 seconds, we moved them a little bit this way, they switched weapons, they switched outfits, shot 2 seconds again in slow motion, we shot everything in slow motion there. We moved them, so with, and then we stitched together all together, I think 20 to 30 shots. You know, just keep them together. So then it gave us this crowd, right? And it looks pretty okay. It looks
really
amazing.
Good. Yeah.
But here comes the thing is that when I put out the first trailer, people started approaching me that, I've seen the trailer. I'd like to work with you and this sort of thing. And quite a few people approached me. So when this gentleman called Toby from Germany messaged me, I thought that he's just one of these guys who, you know, he just want to let me know that I'm here, you know, that sort of thing. So he's like, I can help you with the visual effects. And I told him that because that's very, you know, it sort of hit me a little bit. It's very close to the visuals, so that means that's very close to me. So I was like, okay, can I see your portfolio? And then he went, well, in the last 15 years, no one asked for my portfolio, but yeah, I can show you my portfolio. And then turned out that he was working on Game of Thrones. Various different really big TV projects in Germany. And essentially we had a big chat, and he and I clicked immediately, because he, even though he's a VFX artist, he's a strong believer of VFX needs to enhance what's already there. So then he went ahead and recreated these scenes in terms of he added a few helmets, he added a few lances and weapons sticking out. So in the end he recreated the whole lineup with a crowd simulation. So that was not our original idea, but because he came along, and at the time when he came along, I was like, well, it looks okay. You know, what we did, it looks okay, but we cannot afford VFX. You know what I mean? Because we cannot afford an extra 10 grand just to make this scene look amazing. And he came along and he was just so humble, and I can't be thankful enough for him. He loves squirrels. So all he asked me to do is that I don't want to get paid. Originally, he didn't even want to be credited. So all he asked for to donate a certain amount of money to save the red squirrels in the UK. That's all he asked for.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I'm going back to what I've been saying, that I think when you do the right things, good things are going to come around to your project. That was one of a prime example. And I have to say that another prime example is Nimrod Studio, the sound studio. In the project's post-production, one of the most challenging parts for me was to nail the sound. The original guy who did it, who I'm not going to name, he saw himself as an expert, but when I got the first samples back, I knew that this is not the sound. The quality of his work does not match the visuals, and I put a lot of work into the visuals. So then we had to depart, and I found another sound team in Columbia, a big studio, and they dropped the ball again.
Really?
And it wasn't about the quality. It was that for 2 months there was no work done, and when I kept checking them, you know, every other week, that where are we. The message they gave me was that we are moving in a good pace, but I don't want to show you a half done project.
And this went for how long?
2 months.
2 months.
So we actually lost 2 months in post-production because of this. And then in the end, when I started seeing their work, finally I knew that you guys did not do anything in the last 2 months. So then we had to depart, and then I actually reached out, just randomly reached out to one of them, to the last music video we shot. We shot it for a composer, and I asked him that, do you know anyone? And he was like, yeah, I know this guy. His name is Rich. And okay, I will talk to him. But he made it sound like, and I looked their portfolio up. They work with Disney, Netflix, Discovery Channel. And I was like, I'm not going to be able to afford that. So then I reached out to 2 different big studios in the UK. I had a chat with them. They gave me quotes, and so I had to make a choice. But before that, I was like, okay, let's talk to Rich. And then Rich asked me to send over the film. And he came back. I don't know why, or because he never said why he feels the way he felt. But he said that they feel so inspired by what they saw that they want to do it. And they understand limitations of the budget, so let's make it work. What makes for both of us? So that's, again, I was very skeptic. How is this going to plan out? They turned around the project under, I would say, 2 weeks.
They
turned around the whole thing. 2 weeks.
Wow. Having lost 2 months to a whole studio, this guy comes on and turns it around in 2 weeks. That's incredible.
And that being said, that they remastered all the music, what our musician did. They remastered everything, all the tracks. They remastered everything. They asked the musician to send it. So with that, even that, it's so again, I have to say that we agreed on a certain number of days they're going to spend, but I am 100% sure they spend way more than we agreed on. And I think, I think it's because it's just, you know, it's when you really focusing on something and put your heart into it and really put your heart into it and do the right things, then I think positive things will come around. That's a huge lesson for me.
I think a big part of that, again, just kind of goes back to those relationships and just kind of being the kind of person that inspires people to actually want to help you. I mean, it's one thing, you know, having put all the work into the movie and the movie's great and all that kind of thing. But, you know, if you're trying to get it finished and somebody meets you and they're like, oh, he's a jerk, they're not going to put that kind of work in. If they connect with you and they can see the kind of person that you are, that you're working hard, that you're passionate about what you do, that you have respect for the people that you're working with, yeah, you'd be surprised how many people will go that extra mile to help get you over that finish line. I think that's fantastic, and it's good to have those kinds of stories out there where people realize that people actually will help them if they are in a bind, and if you are actually approaching your project positively.
Yes, exactly. But again, the universe I feel like, at least this is my experience, my personal experience, that the universe is gonna turn to you. So obviously this studio would have not had the same reaction, or if previously we did not put all the effort into what we did. So when you do put the work in, then I think other people notice that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah. So what is next for you after having gotten this one over the finish line? So are we looking at more short films like this? Or are you looking at doing feature film? What's the next step for you?
I'm wanting to jump into the deep of feature films. So I am developing a script right now. So that's where I am. Am I going to do more short films? But at this time, all my focus is on developing the script. Which is not as easy as I thought it will be.
Yeah, that's your next big challenge. But you know, if you're going to approach it the way you approach this, then I see success on the horizon for you. So best of luck with it. And thank you so much for taking the time to speak to us today. If people want to become more familiar with your work or find out more about the film, we'll put the links in the description. And as you are listening to this podcast, the film is on cameolaunch.com as you listen to this podcast. So once again, thank you very much, Thomas, for taking the time out to speak
to
us today. Congratulations on an amazing film. And we can't wait to see what you do next.
Thank you for having me, Nigel.
No problem at all. And to our listeners, if you want to hear more filmmaker interviews like this one, you can head to cameolaunch.com/podcast. You can also find our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and many more. Please do follow us on the socials at Cameo Launch on Facebook, X, Instagram, and YouTube. And please don't forget to head to cameolaunch.com and sign up to our newsletter for regular updates and film reviews. So once again, thank you, Thomas. And thank you to all of you for joining us today. You all take care, and we will see you next time.